Translation by Srila Prabhupada. By development of the desire of the great sages to know, the ears, the power of hearing, the controlling deity of hearing, and the objects of hearing became manifested. The great sages desired to hear about the self. Repetitively, please. By development of the desire of the great sages to know, the ears, the power of hearing, the controlling deity of hearing, and the objects of hearing became manifested. The great sages desire to hear about the self. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, by advancement of knowledge, one should try to know about the Supreme Lord, the summum bonum of everything. Knowledge does not mean knowledge only of the laws of nature or physical knowledge, which are working by the direction of the Lord. The scientists are eager to hear about the physical laws working in material nature. They are eager to hear through the medium of radio and television about things taking place far away from them on other planets. But they should know that the power of hearing and the instruments for hearing were given to them by the Lord for hearing about the self or about the Lord. Unfortunately, the power of hearing is misused in hearing the vibrations of mundane affairs. The great sages were interested in hearing about the Lord through Vedic knowledge and nothing more. That is the beginning of oral reception of knowledge. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Amlitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, what is unique about this particular verse, perhaps you noted, is the preliminary verses and the following verses are all talking about the Lord desire, what he wants. He wants a movement there for his legs. He wants to... And there's a whole list of things described there. The Supreme Purusha desired to have smell, therefore smell came about. But here he's talking about what the sages want. Bodhyamanas Rishibir. That there's a desire to understand by the rishis. It immediately kind of takes things to a different realm here. This is about how the universe is created. So where are these rishis in all this? Where is the desire for them to know something? Where is that placed? So this chapter deals with immense, immense realms of time and concepts, excuse me, and concepts of reality that we are not taught in school or academia or media or politics. Nowhere are they talking about such vast periods of time. So here there's something going on. There's something else going on in the universe. That where are these sages? So how I'm seeing this is that they're there lying dormant in a dormant state. We hear about that when all the kind of universe is kind of brought into Mahavishnu, everything's in rest. But that desire, that aspiration, it's still urging to manifest itself. So the rishis, their characteristic is that they're deep thinkers. They want to know the truth. They want to know what's real. What they want to understand things. So that yearning is there in them. And it is such an important yearning that here Mahavishnu is manifesting the ability to understand things through their desire. He's not talking about what he wants. He's talking about the desire of the rishis. This also indicates, you could say, the very intimate relationship that the Lord has with his devotees. that he is obliged to fulfill their aspirations for learning, for knowing things. And this is the word, desiring to understand. So immediately this opening few words brings in the concept of karma, reincarnation. Actually, later on in this chapter, we're going to hear a whole list of all these super people who are running the universe and how it's all by karma. So if you don't, we hear in the Bhagavad Gita that if you don't achieve perfection in this life, then it'll continue in next life. So here we can see even in the next universe, the next manifestation, and we're exposed to these ideas of time where Mahavishnu, he's lying down on this causal ocean through the pores of his skin or his breathing, universes manifest and they last for as long as his breath. It's also described that Mahavishnu lives for 1,000 of his years. So how many breaths are in 1,000 years? We could calculate something like that. So in one breath, the universe is created, and he breathes in, it all folds into itself, and it's all left dormant. So these rishis, this is talking about how things first started. It's not talking about, you could say, how Brahma created things. It's kind of going right back to the core, the fabric of how existence is. So these sages are there, lying dormant, with a desire to know the truth. And what this also indicates is that the universe is about that. It's about, its whole purpose is to give you knowledge of how things are, to understand. That's what its purpose is. We also know, eko bahunam yo vridhati kaman, that Krishna created many to fulfill their desires. Yo vridhati kaman. So not only is it to fulfill the desires, but the real desires that the Lord has this impetus to fulfill is that desire to understand. So this, all the ability to understand is coming because of the desire to want to understand. So what it's telling us is that if we simply have a genuine, sincere desire to know truth, then Krishna will manifest the facilities for us to understand what that truth is. So these rishis, as Prabhupada points out, a rishi is a sage, a deep thinker. He wants to know what is really going on. In fact, we find ourselves today frustrated in society that we also would like to know what's really going on. What is the truth? What's really going on in society? What's really happening? Who's going to tell us the truth? Who can we go to who's going to tell us the truth? It's pretty sure that whatever you hear nowadays, it's not the truth. But we want someone who's going to tell us the truth. So here it is. The Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us light in this dark age of no one knows what the truth is. The truth is that there is God. The truth is that there are sages who want to know real truth, and fortunately for us, they want to share that truth with us. And therefore, there is truth. So these sages, they want to understand. And what is it they want to understand? Atmanas taj jigrikshitam. This is, so the Lord, for this is a word here, jigrikshita. And yesterday's word was didrikshita. And the Maharaj gave a very technical term what it means, which I can't remember what he said. And I can't understand what it means either. But there's something about that word that the Lord, he desired to take up. So the Lord desired to take up that. He took it up because the sages wanted knowledge. Therefore, the Lord, he took it up. They wanted to know Atmanas. It's interesting here that, of course, the word Atma means the self. It can mean, in our case, it could mean the body. It could mean the mind. It could mean the soul. It's that which, that our identity. But their interest is the Atmanas, the identity of existence. In other words, they're talking about Krishna, they're talking about God, they're talking about Mahavishnu, they're talking about creation. And if you look at the actual words being used here, it's all in in capitals. Whereas if we heard the word Atma, we wouldn't necessarily know what it was referring to, but the writers of the books are very kind to us, and they're pointing out that they're talking about the Supreme Being. And we can recognize that, because we may know ourselves, but we may not know Krishna. But if we know Krishna, the real Atma, then we can understand ourselves in relationship with Krishna. So these sages, because they have the desire to know, and they want to know about, well, what is truth? What is Krishna? Therefore, Krishna manifests the universe to fulfill that desire. Karo cha nirabidyesham. And to know something, you have to have a pair of ears. The word karno, it means two. Oh, is a dual word. You have to have two ears. And so this is what we're doing today. We're experiencing this. In fact, you could say the reason why Krishna manifests universe is for this purpose. So people with ears can hear about Atmana. So we're experiencing it personally, and we find that we get understanding. Understanding is something that I remember one devotee was commenting on the Bhagavad Gita. He was saying how the Bhagavad Gita, it's self-revelatory. It reveals itself to you by reading it. One thing is understanding it. You could say allegorically, or some details. But to really understand it means you see it, you feel it. Tattva darshina. Again, that word tat is there. Tattva means the truth that follows from something. Like you say, I say, look there, that's a clock. It's something that you can perceive. So this truth is there, and by having ears and listening to it, then you can also get understanding. So in the way it's all to describe, you could say a process of sadhana, that you put your ears into the vicinity of hearing about the soul, hearing about Krishna, and then you get understanding. You get realization from what you're hearing. Disha Shrotram Gunagraha. Disha is interesting here because when you look at how Prabhupada used the word Disha, then only in this section, only in this word for word, does he say the direction does he say the god of air? But generally when they look at the word Disha, not generally, all the other times when the word Disha is used by Srila Prabhupada, he's talking about directions. So again, there's three things being described in these verses. We're talking about the demigods, the demigod of something, the person who possesses the senses, and then you could say the material manifestation around it. So here Prabhupada talks about the god of air, Disha. There are the anyway, there's ten directions. Lokapalas? Maybe. But it's called Digpalas? Okay. So it's ten. There's ten directions, and there's a different personality in charge of them. I couldn't find a proper quote specifically where he's outlining what these ten are, so there are other references there on the internet search, but I wasn't so sure of them, so I didn't take a note of them. But there are ten directions. So generally, the word Disha is used, it means in the term of direction. But here Prabhupada said the god of air. So I had to think about that a little bit. What could that mean? We know the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am a shabdike. I am the sound in ether. And ether also means space. It means you're existing in some space. For example, if you have a vacuum and you suck out all the air, there's still space in between. There's something in between, even though there may be no air. So this word directions kind of coincides with that. Wherever you go, you're in some kind of space. Now, air is also everywhere. Bhumir apanalo vayu kam manur buddhi evacha ahankara ityame bina prakriti ashada. That these eight material elements are everywhere in different degrees. We hear that when people go high, there's less air. It probably means there's less oxygen. There's something there that they're in. For example, how do you sense air? Well, go like that. You can feel it on your skin. That's how you know what air is. How do you know what ether is? Then you're hearing sound. That's a distinction between the two things. So if you go very, very high, if you were to go into space and you went like that, would you feel anything on your hands? If you do, then air is still present. Of course, I don't know what the scientists say about that, because we don't know what the science is really saying about that. But it's just as a thought. So here Prabhupada used the word the god of air. But generally disha means directions. And it became manifested. So Krishna produced the ears because the sages wanted to hear. So that's the purpose of the universe, to hear about the Lord, and therefore you get ears. And the demigods are in charge of the directions, in charge of the process of hearing, the power of hearing, and the objects of Shrotam, the power of hearing, Gunagraha. For example, if you've got a computer and it ain't plugged in, it's got no value. You can't use it. If you've got no electricity, you've got no battery, then you've got a tool, but it ain't any use. So you have to have the ears, and you then also have to have the power of hearing. And Gunagraha. Gunagraha is the same word that we had yesterday, and that was, yesterday was the power of seeing. Today it's the power, the objects of hearing. And guna means ropes, the three modes of material nature. And graha means like planets. So the way I'm understanding it is like the planets, they're kind of on ropes. They kind of have their orbits, they're stuck in a position. So there's something that's grabbing the senses. The objects of the senses, our senses are just pulled towards objects. We can't help it. Now, in a purified state, we're drawn towards the Krishna conscious objects of the senses, but if we don't have a Krishna conscious atmosphere, then we'll be drawn to the material objects of the senses. Therefore, that's the word, how the word is, guna graha, is used there. So these three things are described, and in Prabhupada's Purport, he mentions that the Bhagavad Gita talks about knowledge in various places. We may have our own verses that come to mind. Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta Eko Bhakti Vashishite, of the four types of people who take shelter me, those with knowledge, with Eko Bhakti, they're the best. So Krishna's pointing out that knowledge. He said in the place, Tesham Sarata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pridipurvakam Dadami Buddha Yogam Tam Yenaman Upayantite. That those who are dedicated to me, Tesham, always, with love and devotion, I give the Buddha, again that same word, Buddha, I give the knowledge by which they can come to me. So the whole Bhagavad Gita is about advancement of this type of knowledge. It's about the knowledge of yourself and the knowledge of the Supreme Self, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Knowledge does not mean knowledge only of the laws of nature or physical knowledge, which are working by the direction of the Lord. The scientists are eager to hear about the physical laws working in material nature. I was listening to some debates recently of devotees talking to scientists or materialists. And of these three things, they have some grasp of, you could say, the three things I was talking about, the realm of the demigods, the realm of consciousness that has senses, and then there's the kind of the gross physical realm, adibhautik, adiatmic, adidaivika. So the materialists have some concept of the material, and they kind of bring their consciousness into that realm. They've got no sense of consciousness being one of three elements of existence, And they certainly have no concept of demigods, gods, the divine. In fact, their modus operandi, the way they operate, is they will not accept a divine hand in life. Therefore, they'll never understand. This is what these verses of the Bhagavatam are telling us, that you have to accept these three things. There is consciousness that has the senses around it. There's the gross physical realm, and there's the hand of the divine. This is what reality is. If you take out consciousness, you take out the realm of the divine, you won't have truth. You've got one of the three legs. Sometimes you get a milking stool for milking the cows. And you might have three legs. Imagine having a one-legged stool on one side of the chair. You can also get one-legged milking stools. You strap it to your back and you just sit on this one leg and you've got some rotation. But imagine you've got a three-legged stool and the two legs are missing. You can't sit on a stool like that. So the materialists, the scientists, they cannot come to truth because they cannot accept the hand of the divine. So oftentimes Prabhupada is quite hard on them, and it seems quite justifiable. I was reading something yesterday just to prepare my notes for this presentation, and most published scientific papers can't be verified. People will try to follow that example, and it can't be verified by what the person wrote. I knew a man. He was, I was with my wife, and I were running this Namahata group, and there was a doctor there who his responsibility was to help administer European grants for scientific research. So people would put their bids in to get funding for a particular type of research. Now you can imagine if you're being funded to have a certain kind of scientific result and you're getting paid for it, you might have the tendency to alter the readings so you get your funding continued. And sadly, this is something that we're being exposed to, not so much in the public domain, but certainly in the kind of secondary news domains, you find that's exactly what's been going on. That science, the word science has been hijacked by malicious thieves, basically. They're stealing from the population by using the word science that people hope is truth, and they're manipulating people. So therefore, the scientific realm does not give truth today because they don't have the hand of God. Now, obviously, there is a realm of science where people do accept that the hands of God. But here, what the Bhagavatam is pointing out, the fundamental things is that there is, okay, this material world is going on almost automatically, and this is also going to be described in this chapter. It almost appears it's all going on automatically. But it's also going to be pointed out that Krishna, that God hand is there, so you don't think it's automatic. Krishna is there. He's the kind of the hand in all things. Prabhupada's pointing out as well that whatever medium the scientist has, that was also been given to him. Prabhupada pointed out they had this desire to they'd like to talk through using radio or television. Of course, there were no computers then. Now we'd probably say internet or whatever else people are using today. But that was also given to them. I mean, for example, we all use our phones, but none of us, I would think, know how to build a phone. Just imagine you had a phone and you had to start it. We couldn't do it. So scientists have been giving all these tools, but they don't give acknowledgement to who gave them those tools. This is what Prabhupada's pointing out here in the purport. And Prabhupada's pointing out as well, from this verse, that the reason why we have ears and intimate is to find out about the self, to find out about Krishna. This is the purpose for the ears, the purpose for the power of hearing, is to understand the Supreme Lord. The great sages were interested in hearing about the Lord through Vedic knowledge and nothing more. This is the beginning of oral reception of knowledge. So accepting the Vedas, accepting the books, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a start of actually starting to see things as they are. And this is what those who are rishis, those who really want to find out truth, they don't waste their time with other things. Now, us in the sadhana bhakti realm, we may often get distracted by regulative distractions. But the rishis, they don't waste any time. Their only interest is to absorb themselves in Krishna, the essence of existence, and their own spiritual identity in relationship to that existence. So in summary, the universe is created, or Krishna is giving acknowledgement that he's created the sense of hearing because there are those who want to hear about the Supreme Absolute Truth. And therefore, they're given ears, they're given the ability to hear, and there are things that are interesting to hear. So, for example, as we advance in our Krishna consciousness, we find that our guna graha, that which captures our interest to hear, is more and more consistently transcendental. We don't find interest in hearing, you know, what's happening in the village or things like that. We simply want to find deeper and deeper things about Krishna consciousness. So this is the points I got from this verse and purport. If you have any questions, comments.
The thing that occurs to me is hearing is a very powerful medium. Also in spiritual life, if we're not careful, because we can be drawn into hearing prajalpa or what's happened in the past here with ISKCON or with the Muslims, all this. Actually, we should be concentrating on that which is good for us, not that which is generally, you could say, sort of happened in the past or going to happen in the future. So I think the one thing we have to be careful of in spiritual life is this thing called prajalpa, that which draws us away from the spiritual reality, and we look at things that are not conducive to our devotional life, that we may be in a religious situation. So that's one of the things to be careful of, that we concentrate on that which is positive in what will help us in our spiritual life. You could say, the guru, the more advanced devotees.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the class, Prabhu. Very nice, very technical. It's always very nice to hear that there are personalities behind this sort of a physical manifestation. So I think it's very important to kind of adjust or to understand this topic. My question is, Prabhupada is mentioning, he's making a statement, they're eager to hear through the medium of radio and television. So this point that they're eager to hear. So people are eager to hear. My question is, how we present Krishna consciousness, that they're eager to hear Krishna consciousness. Or in other words, scientists, they have philosophical and scientific minds. Can we present them, for instance, Sankhya Yoga, like or giving them the teachings of Jnana Yoga, that look, this is how the material cosmos works. But the thing is, our minds don't operate on such a level as their minds. So they are very, very technical personalities, very profound. I have many friends which are from a scientific background, very smart, very intelligent. And if you present the truth to them in such a degree that their scientific and complicated minds can digest it and understand it, dissect it, then they're happy to accept. But the question is, do we have the capacity? And if, do we have books which can facilitate that, particularly on their language, on their level? That's my question.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I had a hope that our scientific presentations would be so irrefutable that the scientists would just bow down and surrender. But when you hear that our key devotees who are in that realm, when you hear their debates with such materialists, it's not that they accept it at all. It's a little frustrating. Why can't they just understand these things? They're huge blockages. And the word Maya Parityagyan comes to mind. That because they're not actually sincere in heart, therefore their intellect just keeps them lost. I heard a discussion by Akandari Prabhu with, I can't remember what he was. Again, I was surprised how Akandari can keep up with that kind of intellectual jargon. But he was there the whole time. There was no surrender from the other person. And then I heard a presentation by Rinanda Maharaj. He was talking to a vlog atheist. And again, there was no surrender to that point. And then we have hopes like Judhakarma Prabhu. He wrote this book about forbidden archaeology. But it's not even in our own field of Krishna consciousness. There are also discussions about its use and its validity. So, how can we do it? This is the dilemma of the preacher. How can we influence people to be Krishna conscious? How can we somehow affect their hearts? How do we get Sariputta? How do we get devotees like Judhakarma? How do we get these devotees to surrender to Krishna? They became, something stirred them, and they were able then to build the science behind, they could see things scientifically. So yeah, it's the great challenge of our mission, that we somehow or other have to try our best to make Krishna conscious relevant to the world. I mean, do we have answers for society? Are we debating, what is our answer to all the problems in society? What do we say? Sometimes we're very blessed that we're not put on the pedestal and ask, well, what is your opinion about these things? I remember one story, one devotee was asked, well, what do you think about people who got AIDS? And someone had a newspaper said, well, they should be locked up. a point was that because they got AIDS, they're going to pass disease to other people. So somewhere in the interviewer, who was a newspaper article, had captured this question. So are we ready? Do we actually have answers that are actually going to help society? It's interesting that when Prabhupada was talking to that police officer who was asking Prabhupada, hey, you got some ideas to help society? Prabhupada said, yes. Basically kirtan and wide-scale prasadam distribution. And he wasn't just talking about people who were homeless on the street or on drugs and stuff. He was talking about everyone in society getting prasadam. So we have devotees who really believe that kind of that message, and that's what they're trying. Somehow they've got to purify people. So yeah, how do we do it? How do we make Krishna conscious so reasonably acceptable that scientists will accept it? It's hard because, again, of the three pillars, they don't accept demigods. They don't accept, okay, Krishna's one thing, but demigods? You could say one thing is God, but these demigods up there somewhere in this universe, there's so many difficult things for them to get their heads around. And the sense of consciousness as a truth in itself. But, where the movement needs deep thinking devotees to answer the question that you're asking. How can we do it? How can we present things so reasonable that reasonably minded people can take it on? So there's a great need for it, that we have to have a mission, a society of missionaries who are trying to affect the world in a very positive way, in a very reasonable way. Yeah, it's a very good question. Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Just throw in a kind of comment and ask you to tell me what you think. I was recently came to my attention, it's actually Rita Anandamaraj was saying this, that the kind of dichotomy between science and religion is kind of a recent thing. If you look back at previous, you know, centuries, many of the very deeply religious people, they were also natural philosophers, and they were making discoveries in the material realm. And it seems to me that, or it seems that from history, that it's only in recent times that this whole dialect, this whole, it's almost like a false fight between scientists and religious people has become very prominent, and it kind of is how we shape our vision of reality. But actually that whole fight between the two, it's just, it's not actually historically there, and you can just kind of be a scientist and be religious at the same time, and there was never really a distinction between, oh, this person's scientific, whereas this person's religious. And it's kind of, we've divided, and it's kind of blurring our vision. And from the perspective of Krishna consciousness, we as devotees, we very much buy into this for a good reason, because Srila Prabhupada wanted to distinguish between the false guru scientists and spiritual scientists, and therefore we have this caricature of material scientists as well, and we kind of see things as them and us. But I'm just wondering, how do we get through to scientists? Maybe we have to, we can explore different ways of approaching them and just do away with that paradigm altogether and say, actually, that this is just a false thing that's dividing people.
I was there's a discussion going on about archaeology and what the archaeological records show. And some of this, actually called Madhavendra Puri, he's in Ypsilanti, and he's pointing out you don't find any archaeological evidence for cows, horses, or elephants going back millions of years. The archaeological evidence shows something different. So if we're talking, if we're talking different worlds and what they're seeing, then it's difficult to kind of come to some common ground. So it seems that we have to have something that's based on what people are also seeing. There's also discussion, obviously, Drudakarma, that's his field, about, finding ancient antiquity of human there. But it's not that everything he says is being accepted. It's not that science, it was fantastic what you're saying, it's true, I'll just surrender to it. They're not accepting those things. It's a bit like bridge preaching. When you're a Hare Krishna and you're talking as a scientist, they know, well, actually, you believe in God. So at some point, the people you're talking to have to either accept there is a God, or they know you're just, speaking to them in a way that a neutral ground, but they know what's really behind your back. Yes, again, same kind of point. How do we influence people?
Prabhu. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. One of the things you already mentioned, like how did we got Sadaputta? How did we got Drita Karma? Because in time they got to Krishna consciousness, they were young people exploring, just started to explore science. So in that sense, to preach that scientists who are already accomplished, already very thick in knowledge, is not going to happen. I is to spread Krishna consciousness to influence young people who are just entering the field of science or whatever, and make them devotees, and then if they continue their studies, they will steer their own views and influence slowly. So this is long, long term, but that's how it will change eventually. Not those who are accomplished already, their pride, their whatever academic knowledge will not allow them to accept our theories. Even you can see, for example, even as a devotees who are accomplished doctors or whatever, they also have this baggage of having like medical scientific approach. In many cases, medical science, for example, and many flaws, which are still accepted, ways of healing people, whatever. Even devotees who are in that field, they're influenced by this curriculum, whatever they learn in school. They cannot change these views into, for example, more alternative approach of effective healing. This is just one small example that this weight of knowledge of academic studies will not allow accomplished scientists, doctors, theologians to change their views. We just see in many cases devotees debating with accomplished persons and they defeat them completely. They're defeated, but just they don't want to accept. So that's the kind of thing which comes to my mind. Preach to young people who enter in the fields, and if they remind devotees, this change will happen gradually.
Just a question. What in our current trajectory of making these young devotees, how long will it take before we have a tipping point? How long will it be? When will we get to a million devotees in this country? Who are young, practicing Krishna consciousness, but have a scientific mind? What is our trajectory? Where is that being monitored and nourished? It seems there's an area.
Not overnight. During 10,000 years, you'll see if you come back. No, that's how it is. Like, you know, for Lord Chaitanya, for Krishna, 10,000 years is nothing. We are impatient. We are still. This is our baggage. You are so impatient. You want to make devotee overnight, but you just only point if devotees are seen everywhere in every fields of state affairs, science, whatever. Slowly they will notice. He is Hare Krishna. He is Hare Krishna. You open the TV. There's Hare Krishna. So it's kind of overall. So whatever we do. We are present much more in every field almost. So it's kind of slow. It's going to happen during 10,000 years.
Thank you.
Patient.
Any other questions or points? Okay, final.
It's a very interesting concept there that actually religion, even some very deep moral sort of a presentation of certain values, or even science, or even being a football fan of a particular football team, it's the same thing. Same thing, because even in science you have something called axiomatic truth, which involves, to a certain degree, faith. That you have to have faith, and they're saying that science is only like numbers and observations and truth and reality, but that's not true. Even in science you have element of having faith in something. So it's just a perverted reflection of investing your faith into something different. People investing, faith is the actual currency of the material world. There's nothing else. Faith can be invested in your football team, in your religion, in you being a vegan, in you doing, following this, following that. But actually faith is the currency which, you know, makes the world go around. So I've seen many radical vegans, I've seen radical Christians, radical Muslims, I've seen radical Hare Krishnas. But the thing is, it's where you invest your faith in. So I speak with scientists, I speak with many of other different traditions, and what is the overpowering element is that there's lack of sort of a higher sensitive wisdom, which is sort of a segregated from the emotional mind. If the emotional mind invests in something, and then if you tackle that something, then people will not change. And that's just the, I see it. But I think with people which have a lot of knowledge and wisdom, sometimes some emotional nourishment is better than sometimes hardcore philosophy and wisdom and knowledge, if that makes sense. Yeah, Hare Krishna. Sorry for that.
Thank you very much indeed. Srimad Bhagavatam McKee.